So, thank you all for joining. I don't know who else is coming, but of course I'll let them in. It's your meeting, and I thought that potentially Lori and I decided not to have these because we've been doing those CEO, COO check-in chats, which we're continuing through this month, and maybe we'll continue to do it at 4 o'clock. But it's not just small agencies, right? So this is what makes this special because it's small agencies to really talk about, you know, things that are concerning you. So
are any of you guys participating in the new JFNA grant for human service organizations?
Yes, we are.
We're
just developing. I mean, my federation exec and I sat down early last week and kind of mapped out a list of all the things that we can claim under that and that we can, you know, really promote. And then also wanted to include some of the other partner organizations in the area too, who are doing anything else similar, especially some folks that we're partnering with, but it's primarily for all of our programs, which I'm happy about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it makes sense. It could save, you know, when P&A comes through, that money can relieve the P&A process of granting it. Are you guys all familiar with this program before Jane and I go off on our, you know, about what the JFNA Human Services Grant is?
Yes, okay. Looks like okay. Lauren is, but hold on, Lori, before you talk, it looks like we have someone new who's joining us today, right? Hi, Amy. I think
you're Amy.
Hello.
Hi.
Does anyone know her, or we're just welcoming her like the good old
Amy? Amy's not a person.
We've exchanged emails.
Lots of emails.
I've been trying to do this for weeks now, so I'm so glad you joined, Amy.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself to us, you know, and let us know where you are and what's going on so that we can... And you'll learn all about us. And if we can change our names to include our communities, that would be helpful.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
So, Amy, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for welcoming me. Sorry, I was a minute late, a couple minutes late. I'm from Austin. I'm at the Austin JFS. And I just started in August. And I've been wanting to join this group for a while. So I'm really excited to be here.
Welcome.
So, and you have a different... you know, a lot of us are social workers, right? And I guess
I'm a social worker too, but right. Yeah, but I'm also a rabbi. So I was serving Temple Beth Shalom, a Reformed congregation here in Austin for 8 years. And I'm now going back to my social work roots, which I'm really excited about.
Great. Okay, welcome.
Fabulous.
Okay, we were talking about the JFNA grant. So continue talking. I just wanted to make sure you got to say hello. We got
thanks.
I just wanted to make sure that, you know, all of us small ones, you know, knew about it and, you know, kind of looked at that.
I'm very curious, Lori, how it's being, well, you're part of a
we're part of the federation, right? We're an integrated federation. Yeah.
For those of you who are not, I'm curious how your federation has presented it to you that they are going to work it, because in my opinion, I'm not sure that it's being done the way that NJHSA perhaps conceived of it.
Okay, go on.
So the way that my federation put it to me was that they were going to use that to ensure that I got my full allocation and that any matching funds that came would definitely come to me, you know, as the social service agency. But ultimately what that meant was if the campaign fell short, that my funds would be coming from the matching funds, but that other funds would be funneled to other agencies so that proportionately, does that make sense to you, that we're proportionately getting the same? You know, when I heard about it, my instinct was, come on, let's get together. Let's identify the donors we're going to go after and let's get them to up their gifts. And you know, for CJFS, they're going to up their gift and then we're going to get the matching. And they were like, no, this is just part of our regular campaign. And, you know, when we think there's some potential for somebody to increase, we're going to, you know, let them know about the matching funds as a motivator for them. But it did not, it was not, it was not what I thought was intended, which was we're going to go out and try and raise human services dollars.
Right. That's what I think the intention was supposed to be or is supposed to be. So potentially your federation is not doing it, being kosher about it, if that's the right word.
And that's probably because they got such a, you know, they have a new CEO and they got a very late start on their annual campaign. So their annual campaign is still going on and they have not yet met their goal.
Uh-huh.
Well, I know, I mean, Lauren, for Indy, even though we are an integrated federation, our campaign pretty much started. We've narrowed our campaign down to September through December now, instead of it being a whole year long campaign. So when this grant came out kind of simultaneously to when, like our Super Sunday was just September 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So they, our federation's endowment and, you know, campaign group sat down and said, this is great. This is how, you know, any increase in what somebody gives will go towards the match, any new gifts. And then we're going to target some people who we know are interested in human services. And then that will all go toward the match. And oh yeah, as a bonus, then if, you know, we get, because for our size community, I think it's, they give us 60, we have to raise 120 for our size.
That's
so tough. That amount of money is pretty much what my allocation is from P&A. So they're like, well, then that would work because then that money is coming from a different source. And then if campaign doesn't hit its goal, then there's the campaign isn't having to worry about that for you guys. So they kind of spun it more in a positive for JFS that, you know, we're going to go out and raise this money and, you know, you're going to basically help deflect if we don't hit our campaign goal.
And I had a question about it, actually. We're separate mostly from our federation, and the ED of the federation told me that the funds that came, you know, if we were to do this, all the funds had to be used for Jews in the community. And honestly, for COVID, most of the money that we've been spending has not been for Jews. It happens to be that most people are asking for help are not from Jews. So I was uncomfortable about even saying we wanted to apply for this because I don't want to get money that I can't use.
Right.
Or make or worse than that, make promises that right now I don't feel comfortable I could keep. And for the small amount it would make sense to do this for, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, honestly, at this point, to ask for more than a couple thousand dollars doesn't feel appropriate. And I'd rather the money went to communities that could use it. But if I'm going to be told that I can only use it for Jews, and fortunately in our community, Jews are not who are in dire need, it doesn't make sense. But I was wondering, like, if I'm being told something different than other communities.
We asked that question as well, and we got kind of a, I don't think it was a total clear answer, and so we're assuming that we don't have to just use it for Jews.
Yeah, I think that this is across the board. I mean, our services are mixed and some of our programs just happen to serve more Jews than others, but I don't think that it's restricted like that. Lisa, is it?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
I think it was targeted, but, right. You know.
I do think that every federation is different and they, you know, you have to talk with them. And I don't think you have to accept, your federation doesn't have to apply for it, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Do you know what we're talking about, Rachel Kornfeld?
Uh-huh. I do. And I think I popped on just when you said what I wanted to hear.
What?
Well, we have a lot of statistics, but our statistics are quite small for Jewish people in need for the targeted areas that we talked about with the Federation in Greenwich. So the two areas they wanted to target, I've got hundreds of people in Greenwich. I have maybe 10 or 15 that fit the criteria for identifying as Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know if I missed it. I did miss the beginning part, but.
I'm just telling you, I'm on the FAQ page right now. There's nothing about it being limited to Jews.
Yeah.
Nothing. So, that's not true. Local service agencies that serve primarily Jewish community members with, and then a whole bunch of things. I have to imagine that there's a lot of wiggle room, but I think it's also a community's decision whether
to move forward. And I read it that way, but it's the tension that we're constantly having with our federation, because we have a very small Jewish community, and so that makes it much trickier to say, well, we're, you know, we try doing a program of giving away tablets to Jewish seniors so they could access the high holidays. I couldn't even get any takers.
Uh-huh. I just wrote to Ruben and I've asked him, he may know more if it's limited to just Jewish clients. And I asked him if he had time, if he wanted to pop on for a second, but I don't know if he does or doesn't. But I don't know if it's limited to Jewish people. It doesn't seem like it could be, but who knows? It's a lot of money, 54 million that you want to give away. And it's a lot of pressure on federations to raise the, extra money in order to get that money. So I'm not sure that all federations are going to take them up on that offer. That's what I mean to say.
We were told that we had to do the fundraising for it.
Well, I think, isn't it that the federation has to do the fundraising for it?
Yes. Yes.
Well.
That's the whole point.
That's actually definitely.
And that's what made it so great for human service agencies, I thought. You know, one thing you didn't have to do, but
it's,
to get funding for programming that you need.
I think that goes back to the usual thing. If you've seen one federation, you've seen one federation. You've seen one JFS, you've seen one JFS. Everybody's got their different little things. Well, if there's stuff that, we can do network-wise, Dawn, let us know.
Dawn,
thanks.
No.
So, and I think welcome Jenny, too. I don't think Jenny's been on one of our calls before. At least not in this kind of a call.
Well, I think I have, but hi, everyone. It's good to see some familiar faces. I'm kind of in a different world. I'm doing some direct work as a consultant for Morse Life Health System, which is a huge organization, health system, that actually is going after this JFNA grant in terms of dollars and working with Federation. And they have, really significant donors. They have a massive endowment. But today I'm also mostly here, just mentioned that because we were talking about the JFNA grant, but here today I'm representing Next Generations, which is a really teeny organization that provides education, mitigating against anti-Semitism, and also does outreach to second and third generation. And so we have this showcase of events with Dr. Rick Felsman that is part of the JFNA ECHO grant, PCTI grant. And I think, Laura, you've been on a couple of them.
I have.
And so I'm here today representing them. It didn't take very hard work, but persuaded them to be members of NJHSA. And as did I, Morse Life. So,
right. And in your past life,
I'm in the big, big, humongous system, and then this teeny little Next Generation.
Right. In your past life, you were the executive director of which JHSA?
Retired from Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Service.
Alpert, right.
Which is humongous. It is not anywhere near our small little one.
Well, you've got a lot of experience. What else are people feeling, thinking about besides this JFNA grant? And hopefully I'll have more information by the end of this call. Moving forward with COVID. Yeah, Jessica.
I have a question for the group. So we are not pursuing the JFNA grant because we don't have an active federation here. And so we got, we were contacted by something called the Good People Fund. And I was just wondering, it's been a little bit of an odd thing because I've been trying to suggest areas that they can fund, and some things they've said, yeah, maybe, and some things they've said no. And they want us to lay out the funding first and then be reimbursed. And, you know, it's not that I'm suspicious or distrustful of them, because Ruben was the one who connected us, but my board is a little wary of doing that. And so I'm just wondering if there are other experiences with them, if how they do this.
I just finished one with them too. I mean, mine was very simple. She basically was looking for different clients that need financial aid that we can't help with. And she just asked me to write up a few cases. We wrote like a paragraph on each of them. And honestly, I thought that she's going to ask for a lot more. I sent her a document with about 4 cases. She said she liked them. She wanted one more, and then gave me more than what she told me that she is going to have before. So she's sending a check to us. So we just haven't paid those specific bills yet, but I didn't think that it was that complicated, but I wondered then why that felt more like that to you.
It was, you know, it seemed okay to me. It was just my board that right. pushed back a little bit. I think, you know, maybe I didn't explain it to them well, and maybe I used the word grant to them, and I shouldn't have done that, because that's, you know, not the normal course of action for.
Yeah. How much do you have to lay out?
It's sort of unseen right now. We have one client who we're hoping we can use this for, and it would just be to be able to pay someone to run grocery errand, do groceries for them. So it wouldn't be that much, but it was sort of the principle of the thing. The board didn't like hearing that, well, we have to pay for it and then be reimbursed by this foundation. Who are they? Mm-hmm. So, Lumore, I'm glad to hear that you guys had a good experience with them, and it seems like they're shaking their heads.
But she also kind of told me from the get-go that they're looking at around $3,500 total. Mm-hmm. So for me, I knew that's what it's going to be like. So that's what I was aiming for. We also found specific bills that these clients needed, and she ended up approving $4,500. So,
okay, yeah, she never gave me a dollar amount, so that's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might be able to just also create like an MOU or a so that, you know, there's something in writing that says you're going to lay out X number of dollars or for X number of clients, and that they are going to reimburse you, so that it may not be a formal contract or a formal grant, acceptance of a grant, but that you have something in writing so that your board feels more comfortable that they're, you know, they owe you, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I don't want to turn anything down right now. And they did reach out to us because we don't have an active federation here that can do any fundraising for us.
Could structure it like a donor pledge with a, you know, expectation of time frame of reimbursement, et cetera, kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
It's a good analogy, Howard. What are you guys looking at down the road for winter come, you know, October, November, December, potentially January, February again?
March, April, May, June, July through 2022.
Yeah. Could we just skip to 2022?
I'm okay with that, you know?
I just want to get to 2021.
I'm like 57, 80 out the door, you know?
I can't look down the road. Every week something changes. So it's.
Well, especially for several of us who are, you know, more north and east, and in the Midwest, like Tara and I, that, you know.
It's getting colder.
Getting colder. And, you know, you're not able to sit outside as much. And, you know, we've had struggles. People are like, are you setting up a sukkah? Can we gather in the sukkah? I'm like, they're setting up a sukkah, but we're not doing programming in a sukkah. And then you always have, at least in Indianapolis, there's, you know, a group who are like, it's fine. We don't need to worry about that. We'll be okay not to worry, as opposed to the other group. If I get it, I get it. Everybody's going to get it at some point.
So we're serving mostly seniors. So we're being very cautious. We're not doing anything programming wise that's not virtual. We are doing, you know, we are doing in-home visits. We are doing in-home personal care. You know, we're providing services in a one-to-one basis, you know, with new protocols. But anything we're doing group-wise is done virtually.
Yeah.
And we're even, you know, we are meeting people face-to-face outdoors, but not one-to-one, not a group at all. So
we had to do outdoor programs that one was way bigger than it was supposed to be. So we shut that down. It was an ice cream social for this NORC program that we run, the Neighborhood Naturally Occurring Retirement Community. And then way too many people came. And so then they're doing outdoor walks or these conversations basically about cooking. They used to be cooking programs, but they're not doing the programs anymore. And they're a maximum of 6 people. Everyone has to bring chairs. Everyone's very spaced out. It has to be outside. But that's going to be ending soon because of the weather.
The weather.
We're not doing any client contact at all. Everything's virtual except food pantry, which is, you know, put food in cars and or deliver and leave in the front of your doors. But other than that, we're not doing any client contact. Everything's virtual, telehealth therapy, technology and phone with seniors, at least probably until the first of the year. And we're just evaluating as we go along. But until the data and the science equals out, we're virtual.
And people still aren't going back to work, going back into the office. People are still working from home.
So we're not in we have some staff that go in and out of the office for periods of time. We have a kind of a structure where our offices are pretty tight and we have like this long hallway with, so I'm only allowing so many staff in at one time, and no two people can be in like the a main office area, and they have to schedule their time in and out. Our therapists really, for the most part, don't want to come into the office. They're doing therapy from home, and they're very happy doing that. And we're coordinating our food pantry preparation with, you know, staff and some volunteers. Again, they have to be scheduled. Only one person in the food pantry at a time, and only two people can drop off and, you know, can deliver to car. I mean, very structured. And we have some administrative support staff that they've scheduled. So we have 2 administrative support and they share days that they go in for a few hours. And then I go in and out when I need to be.
We're basically logistics workers now, right? That's what a lot of, you know, executives are. It's crazy.
We're actually opening the office on October 5th. So we're reopening. I have to think, is the person from CJFS on the call?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, Lauren, I wasn't sure. It says Birmingham. So thank you so much for what you sent to Lisa, the reopening plans.
Sure.
It was great to be able to look at someone else's format to, you know, to build off of. So I really appreciate that.
Sure, anytime.
And that's what you're doing, yeah?
We are opening because we have psychological testing that we want to continue, and we've had the majority of calls that we're getting for people who want anything in person is with our children and adolescents, which makes sense. While all our therapy is virtual, we are offering some in person at our picnic table. We have a garden, so we're doing that, and then we are going to start doing a handful of sessions with people with sort of extenuating circumstances that, you know, would make it beneficial for them to come in. So we have a couple of kids with OCD that it would sort of be helpful for them to meet face-to-face. But we have definitely started to take the precautions. We haven't started yet, which is why our date is October 5th, but we did buy the partitions, you know, and we're checking all of those boxes. And, but we are going to be opening in a very limited capacity.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've done what Rachel has. It's sort of ironic now, since Wisconsin is number 7 for the rate of cases happening, which is really unfortunate. But we have some clients who are really struggling to be able to hear and to meet with their case management. And we don't do therapy. We just do case management. So if they really need to meet with the case manager, it's either done outside at the picnic table, sitting 6 feet apart, or if it's inside, it has to be in a conference room 6 feet apart with masks on and a partition. And so we're trying to do as best as we can, and we're not making any of the case managers come in, but we have one who really feels strongly that she cannot. She's got clients who just can't hear her if they can't meet in person. And so we found ways to accommodate, but in large part, it's because most of our staff aren't coming in. Because we can't have more than one person in an office at a time. And if your door is open, you have to be wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm. We actually, because we are the same, like Dawn, we don't do therapy. We do mainly case management with older adults, families, emergency assistance stuff, and our survivor population. And so our couple caseworkers, they have gone out to the different apartment buildings, and if they're on the first floor, they'll sit outside and either outside or the window, you know, through the window. But we're looking at getting one of those like pods, like a portable, like the pack van kind of trailers that people do during construction, a small, like a 10x10, to have in our office parking lot, so that we can have a 6-foot table on the long end, and then a partition in the middle that's heated for the winter months. Because, you know, there, especially when we're working with our survivors, there's documents that have to be signed and things like that. And it's, you know, can be easier to do it that way. So I didn't know if anybody else had looked at ways that they can do that, especially with the weather constraints.
We've been doing, we have a dementia day program that's obviously not in session currently, but we still have the space available to us, and it's a very large, you know, group room. And so we have seen some clients in that space with a large distance and face shields. But we don't have partitions in that room. Mm-hmm. So we had some of our older clients coming in there and meeting, you know, probably 15 feet apart. But the hearing is an issue. And we have a lot of people who, they just can't manage the technology. I mean, that's really the bottom line. They cannot do anything virtually. So that's how we've been trying to accommodate that, in seeing people face to face, you know, and again, wiping down space between clients and that sort of thing. But there's a limited number of people who are willing to do that. So we're doing a lot more. We were already, but we're most of our face-to-face contact is happening in someone else's house, at their home, mm-hmm. versus in our space.
It's just a lot to think about, especially, you know, when you don't have a big space, and budgets, you know, all the things that go along with it. I know, again, in Indy, we had to let go some staff, and our federation just did another round of letting go of people. So, you know, we're working really more bare bones, I think, than we ever have in so many ways.
Working so much harder now, right? Well,
yeah.
Is everyone working a lot harder now than they did prior to COVID? Yeah.
Well, especially, I mean, I said to somebody the other today, you know, I got to get everything in the database, everything. I'm like, you know what? I used to be able to finish a call or finish a meeting and go back and put it all in the database and be done. Yeah, I don't have that. So now it could be, you know, 10:30 at night and I walk from the kitchen over here and I just sit down. Okay, I'm going to knock out this one, throw that piece of paper away. Knock out this one, throw, yeah. You know, because yeah. It's right here. You know, I see some of you are in your offices and there's a part of me that's a little bit envious of that because I feel like I wonder if that feels a little bit more normal. But I think after 8 months, this feels normal now. So the commute is much better, but there's lots of other sides of it that are a lot different.
Everything just seems to take twice as long.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's stressful, I think, being the CEO of an organization, right? You have all these people who are working for you and you want to make sure that they're employed and it's hard to, and you know, you have a lot of weight on your slight shoulders.
I'm hiring for a few positions and I'm having a terrible time doing it in the clinical world. Just been looking for the right people to head up our clinical department, and then also someone else is leaving because she's in school and with kids at home with schooling, it's just too much. And so replacing her, and I'm just having a, you know, not getting great candidates. I don't know if anyone has any suggestions.
Is it the pay or is it the
candidates? I'm sure it's partially the pay. But it's mostly, I mean, maybe it's because I want this person or both these people to kind of do everything. But I mean, I've tried to modify our job postings and, you know, we put them everywhere. They've certainly been on our website, but I sent them out to the NASW last week, to the other social work schools, to friends in that world, on Indeed, and just not getting great. There was one really great candidate, but she did need a whole lot more than I make. And that was like the best of them. And then there are two young people who've applied who neither of them in regular times I would really want to hire, but I'm thinking about it anyway, just because I desperately need people. Mm-hmm. And they're not the right people. I mean, they're just not. So
don't hire them. That would be my suggestion. Don't hire them if you know that they're not the right people.
I know.
How are people getting therapists? How do they advertise and get them?
Challenging in a non-COVID world, let alone a COVID world. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We haven't had a hard time getting therapists, but at JFS of Greenwich, all of our therapists are contract employees.
That's right. Yeah. You have a fantastic model.
Right. And I have to say we actually, Lisa, Angie's going to go full time in January as an employee. But the other reason that it's better for them is we don't have any benefits, which that has been a barrier. I've been trying to hire a case manager. So we're trying to build that in for next year if possible. Yeah. Does everybody on this call offer benefits to their staff?
Yes.
If they're full time.
Right. Yeah.
Well, how many people on this call do the per diem or contracted therapists? No one?
We just hired someone part-time contract. So I'm interested to hear, Rachel, why that's worked so well for you guys, because it's something we're going to consider as we're growing more also.
Right. I think it's choice and schedule, and also the amount that we pay is far, far more than what they would get if they were working full-time. So a therapist may, you know, can make anywhere from, let's say, $40 to $80 a session, different from if they were working full time, it would probably be more like, you know, $35, if you averaged it out, $35, maybe $40 an hour. Mm-hmm. I'm guesstimating, but around there. So they definitely make a lot more per session, which is beneficial.
Right. And also, I think they don't need insurance benefits, right? Because they get them elsewhere. Either through a spouse or they, right?
Yes.
Tell me how much again you pay? Oh, it's a percentage.
Yes, we do 60% of whatever comes in. So some insurance companies pay, let's say $78 a session, but some pay upwards of, you know, 120 or 130. So they get 60% of that.
That is a good model.
Mm-hmm. It's a great model. I'm curious to know what others who have employees are paying because we the one position, the junior position is a combination, more case management than anything. So there's not a lot of reimbursement available. So I'm curious to know what others are paying for that. And then for their director level for clinical, what are you all paying?
Anybody?
for a full-time therapist, we're paying close to 40 full-time with benefits.
Charlotte?
And, 38 is probably the starting salary. And we have a director of program services, so she's not just a clinical supervisor. She oversees all of our programs and services. And she's, I want to say, close to 70.
Okay.
We're pretty similar. We're a little higher for case managers, and our therapists start at about 42. And you know, we're our cost of living. I don't know where you are exactly, but our cost of
Albany,
living,
New York, yeah.
Yeah. So Albany's not that different, but our cost of living is lower. Our clinical director is at 75.
I tried to hire a new graduate for 50, and she turned me down.
Low.
Some of your challenges is where you're located.
Because I've had some job searches lately, I had a lot of therapists. So I usually typically hire social workers, people with MSWs. This last round of hiring, which was probably a year ago, I had a lot of LPCs, and they wanted 65 or not, they wouldn't go any lower than 65. So I was pretty shocked by that. For this market, I was pretty shocked by that.
Yeah.
LCSW is an advantage over an LPC. That's kind of surprising.
I know. I was really, I'm having a harder and harder time finding MSWs who have strong clinical skills.
Yeah. You have to really search, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you have listservs in your community, like NASW or Birmingham has some sort of, you know, clinician listserv to get on that and to advertise. Sometimes you can get some good people or through your NASW chapter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We just tried and I had to pay for it.
Yeah, you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We also, through our, there's a pretty big mental health working group through our United Way, and they are a good resource to advertise through as well.
Mm-hmm. So this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I just wanted to mention that we've implemented a new system here at NJHSA, which is all calls, as many as we can make, are over in 50 minutes, like a therapist, so that you have 10 minutes to go to the bathroom before your next Zoom call. So I just wanted to say it. I meant to say it in the beginning, but I forgot. So that's a good one, right? It's a good idea. Just get so busy. Yeah.
Get tired of the 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock meetings.
Right. Next thing you know, you haven't eaten lunch and it's 5 o'clock, you know?
It's true.
It's not good. So what are other people struggling with or feeling good about? Doesn't that only have to be struggles, right?
Here's how everybody's pantries are doing. I think that in the beginning of all of this, people would donate more and more and more food to us. And now, especially because we're not there all the time, we're getting a lot less and we're trying to figure out how to be on us buying more food or going to the food bank, then I'm not sure how to get more food at this point.
I think the novelty is worn out. I think at first everybody was really excited about donating and supporting, and it kind of wanes. We use some of our temples to push for that during the holidays.
Yeah, but they're not there. They used to do that too, but now nobody comes to them either. So they don't have basically a place to go.
We have an every other week drop off. But we also still have bins, and so we're on the campus. So in our, in that big building, we still have drop-off bins. So the J just opened up when the governor lifted the gyms. And so people can drop in the bins, but we have an every other week drop off and people just pull up and they can, we have a table out and they can drop off. But yeah, we've seen a little bit of a waning. We saw a little uptick with the holidays.
We had, we worked a lot with our synagogues because they had pickups for either if you ordered a challah or for prayer books. And so it was pick up your prayer book, drop off for the pantry. Mm-hmm. And that worked well. And then we also did one at our office 2 days last week, just drive through. We, you know, our house, our office is in a residential house. So we have a circular drive so people could just pull in, pop their trunk. We would take it out and do that. It's, we haven't, I mean, our need and cost, everything quadrupled, and we have not seen that change.
Yeah,
at all. I mean, every room.
Lamar, do you have a preschool? I can't remember. Do you have preschool?
We do. So what we did for now is we kind of like split the next couple months into different challenges for a community to do. With September being drive-throughs and October being for preschools, because they are together, and then the last couple months are like neighborhood drive-throughs. So we've been pushing it a lot to the point of getting our kids to hold signs and tell us bring us food. So we had a lot of people that did start ordering more online, so that it took us, but like the drive-throughs were not a big hit for us. So we were just standing by ourselves in the office and nobody would show up. And the preschool, like, with the holidays, takes some time to
respond. Like Amazon wish lists and stuff, yeah, that you can pump out. Okay.
So that's what we're doing, and we are getting at least response from that now. But they basically need a lot of reminders that we need food.
Yeah, we usually do like each month, you know, like 1 month it was, can you spare a square? So to donate toilet paper. Can, you know, one it was, we had an inordinate amount of people who wanted gefilte fish. Why? So, you know,
I think that's a really good idea.
It's just targeted. I don't know how much you're going to get with the toilet paper these days, but that was the spare square was pre-COVID. But we have gotten with people, you know, pasta,
yeah,
drop off, you know, pasta kind of things.
Right. I think it's, you know, people are a little complacent because this has been going on so long that, you know, they forget that there's still such a huge need, and that, you know, part of what we have to do is remind them, right, that there's still a huge need, and it's hard, it's wearing, but, you know, that's our goal, that's our job, but it's hard.
We've really partnered a lot with our food bank on some of their larger programs, and RJ is working with us also with Farmers to Families program. So we get fresh produce every week that we distribute to older adults. And then at the J, there's a drive-through where they're doing 1,000 boxes a week and have been since June.
Wow.
And then we're doing with the food bank also a senior grocery initiative program where we're getting 30 pounds of food of non-perishables for seniors each month. So we have 50 clients that we're serving through that. But those are federal grant programs that are coming through our food bank to local agencies. So that may be, you know, if you can look into what some of the larger food organizations are doing, they're looking for a way to push out their food now that for a while the supply chains were backed up, but now that things have settled out some, they're looking for ways to get the food out on the street. So it may be worth looking at some other local collaborators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Lori. Oh, did you want to say something, Rachel?
I was just gonna say, so we actually started a family farm stand, I wanna say like 2 months ago, and it was just a local organic food store that had started donating a couple of boxes, and then we explained to them how much, you know, how much the people that we were giving it to appreciated it. And so they committed to doing, we're up to like 14 families, but we just, every week we go pick it up and they give us an array of whatever they have extra. And it's all about choice. So a little bit different than like the typical pantry, but it's just meant to supplement. Obviously it's not the bulk of the food that they're going to get. But the families are so grateful and it's like beautiful, healthy, fresh food.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Yeah. When you can do that, that's great.
We're doing something similar with our, we have a Shalom food pantry run from our Chabad house here, and they have a regular food pantry, and then they started doing a produce with the food bank. So they do a grab and go for produce every 2 weeks. And then we take 25 of the boxes, and they're big, really plentiful, beautiful boxes of produce. And then we transfer them into two bags, because one box is too hard for a senior to lift, and even for our volunteers. And then we're the deliverer. So for people who don't have transportation, so it's primarily for our older adults, but some families too. And now we're expanding that, because there was a whole farm to families coordinated program, but there's a lot of hurdles to jump through. Mm-hmm. And so we're now taking some extra dollars, and it's actually going to be some from the dollars from the JFNA fund raised, and to buy some kosher supplements. So even though we do already do home delivered meals through JFS now, this is for others. So doing some dairy and some dry goods, and then sending, that'll be again just with those packages every 2 weeks. Yeah. But it's for money's raised, and then you know, we'll see where else we can get from. But I do love the idea of the farm stand too. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good one. I was just gonna say, Lori, that's something that the JFNA monies could go towards, that container, whatever that you're trying to get.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I just wrote Lori, but I found out from Ruben that the majority of clients should be Jewish. I mean, talk about vague. So should be Jewish, right? Yeah. So should, is that mandatory? I don't know. So yeah, I guess you can figure out what that
is. It just depends on what the documentation is that they're going to require.
I'm not aware that they're requiring
right
reporting.
But
it's very
good. It's very strange. It's not very clear. But Laura, did you want to ask that?
I know that with the new format, we have two whopping minutes, and I didn't know if, I mean, you know, sometimes it just organically happens like it did today where we have all these different topics, but if there's anything that anybody has in mind that they would like to see for the next one or future of our get-togethers, to, you know, you can say it now, you can email or send a message to either Lisa or I, either, you know, whatever works.
Or if you feel like you want someone to come in and talk with you all about something, some sort of, you know, special topic that you feel would be, you know, beneficial to you. Oh, and how could I not say the most important thing, which is that our virtual conference is actually happening. We don't know when, but at the last week in April, first week in May, somewhere around there. And we're really looking forward to providing something that's going to be different and exciting. And anyway, I think that if you have any topics, or you have, your agency has any great programs, you know, encourage your staff to send in an RFP. And that's going to be great. And the only other thing that you don't know is that we're having the Executives Forum social event coming up, which is going to be a lot of fun because we planned it. It's October 13th, I think. You're going to get something in the mail, but keep those times open and make sure you come, because it's going to be an opportunity to really get to know each other on a different kind of level than we often get to know each other in these meetings. And we think that'll be really a nice idea. So I think it's October 13th from 5-6:30 Eastern. So mark that down in your calendars, especially when you get the invitation. So let us know if you have anything you want to talk about, if you want anyone to come in and talk with you. We're here for you. Remember, that's the whole point. Just like JHS, Greenwich is here for you, and JHSA is here for you. Okay. Bye, everyone. Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Great to meet you.
Yes.
Shana Tova. Welcome.